You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
The federal government has approved a major expansion of BC's fish farm sector, despite warnings by the 2012 Cohen Commission about the effects of net-based farms on wild salmon. Canada's salmon farming industry uses publicly owned coastal waters to support privately run ventures that increasingly earn profits for multinational shareholders. Farmed fish, put wild fish stocks, various marine species, and marine environments in danger. Speaking with us today is John Waring, Senior Science and Policy Advisor for the David Suzuki Foundation. Hello, John.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. First of all, how do farmed fish, specifically net caged fish, harm the wild salmon industry?
Well, the number one problem with open net pen fish farming is that they essentially hold upwards of 500,000 to a million fish in the water in one location. If you think about how wild salmon move, they migrate. They come out of the river and they migrate to the system. They go out to the ocean. They spread out. They feed, and they don't necessarily associate in that in large, gigantic schools like that on a continuous basis. So these farms, where they're located, have fish in the water 24/7 for up to 2 years while they're growing them out. And when disease or parasites strike that farm, the potential for disease and parasites to be spread to wild fish is amplified, because these fish are sitting in the water, they're shedding virus or they're shedding parasites, and it increases the concentration of those particles in the water around a farm. So when returning wild fish come back, they get exposed to higher than normal levels of pathogens. That's probably the single biggest problem with these farms.
Now, how is the overall marine environment and other marine species affected by the farmed fish?
Well, certainly we have the issue of potential spread of pathogens from farms to wild fish, but other species in the marine environment, like marine mammals, seals, otters, and things like that, tend to congregate around farms and will attack farms and try to get after fish. And in an effort to stave those off, the people on the farm shoot them. There's also problems with entanglements in the nets. So we're hearing stories about sea lions and seals and whales being entangled in the nets when they come and count, and sharks. You know, so they come in and around these things looking for food, and they get trapped within the nets themselves.
Are they affected by the parasites also?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because we really don't know the extent of parasite infestation around fish farms. But when you think about it, a lot of these parasites, there has been some anecdotal, and I have to emphasize this is anecdotal evidence, of bottom fish in the vicinity of farms that have these unusual parasitic copepods that attach to the eyeballs. Now, we don't find those in normal areas in high abundances, but when you're around farms, you do see them. The other issue is some of these pathogens that are on the farms not only affect salmon, but they affect other species like herring, as do the parasites like sea lice. So one of the things that we don't have a good handle on is just how extensive this problem could be. Some of the studies that are being done now are looking specifically at the impacts of salmon farms on wild salmon populations, but we're not focusing on any of these other species. And we could be having a problem there, but until somebody actually looks at it, we won't know what that is.
Now, going back a couple of years, what did the Cohen Commission report back in 2012 recommend for the future of farmed fish?
Well, it's really difficult to say. I mean, there was no one single smoking gun that the Cohen Commission could point to say this is a major problem that is causing problems with our wild stocks. And the other thing you have to realize is the Cohen Commission was specifically focused on sockeye salmon only. That was their mandate. They weren't looking at impacts on other wild species. But one of the things that Cohen did conclude is that he felt that there was a reasonable risk, although he couldn't determine what level of risk there was, that salmon farms were having an impact on sockeye populations. And you can extend that because, and one of the issues, one of the critical issues that he pointed to was diseases and pathogens. Now, a lot of these diseases and pathogens affect all species of salmon. So what he has said in relation to sockeye can be extended to other species. But one of the critical areas that he did identify was in the Discovery Islands area, which is essentially a narrow biological bottleneck between Vancouver Island and the mainland coast. Most of the fish that come out of the Fraser River system and the systems that feed into the Georgia Strait, and this would be streams on the east coast of Vancouver Island, streams on the central coast, those fish will come out and then they'll migrate north through the Discovery Passage, through Johnson Strait and the Queen Charlotte Straits out to sea. And now there are 39 separate salmon farms that are situated along that route, and it's a very narrow route. So if there is any impact from farms, that would be primarily where it would be.
Did the Cohen Commission also look at the what role the Department of Fisheries and Oceans play in all of this?
Well, he did, he was quite critical of the department in several ways. One was that he had pointed out that the department was doing supposedly two things. One was supposed to be managing and trying to restore and rebuild wild stocks, and at the same time promoting aquaculture. And the two aren't really congruent, because if the industry itself is causing problems with wild stocks, then promoting that industry and I would say expanding on it, if we have all these impacts that have been identified to wild salmon, expanding that industry will only magnify those impacts. And we're arguing and have argued that there should be no expansion of production of current levels of fish until we actually get a handle on the degree of impact that the current farms are causing. Because if we are in fact having major impacts on our wild stocks, and the science is pointing in that direction, then simply increasing and expanding that industry without addressing those particular impacts will only magnify the problem.
Now, how has the year-round availability of farmed fish affected the price of wild salmon?
Well, you know, I can't really speak to that because I don't keep track of market situations, but it is a global commodity. The price fluctuates up and down, and there are various countries around the world that are producing huge amounts of salmon. And often it's like anything else where you'll see a glut of salmon that will come on the market that will force the price down, and then other times when there will be shortages. A shortage, for example, would be I think it was back in about 2007, there was a major infectious disease outbreak in Chile that nearly killed the Chilean industry. And Chile was supplying huge amounts of Atlantic salmon from their farms into the United States. Well, they had to shut their industry down, so that resulted in a higher price for Canadian fish. So it's a market-driven, it's a commodity-driven market.
Now, how is the expected expansion of the farm fish likely to further impact salmon and marine ecology?
Well, if you think about a farm that has, I'll throw a number out there, a farm that is operating with 500,000 fish on it, and it has incidences of disease and parasites on that farm. A lot of these farms have what we call low-level infections, ongoing infections of pathogens, like one would be bacterial kidney disease. Bacterial kidney disease is a fatal disease for most species of wild salmon. Those pathogens can be on those farms in higher than background levels. So what they typically do to control that is they treat the farm with antibiotics. But if you then suddenly double the number of fish in the area, and so I would just imagine if you have all these fish are in the water, if they have a pathogen or a parasite and they're shedding it into the marine environment, and then you were to imagine it would be like a going into a room where there's only one mosquito if you're in the wild. The mosquito is the pathogen, and you're in the wild, and you're going through this room, and there's one mosquito. then you're not likely to get bit by that mosquito. But if you have 500,000 mosquitoes in that room, which would be like an elevated level of pathogen that would be seeding into the water through the open net pens, then you're more likely to get bit or infected. And by simply ramping up production, increasing the number of fish in a given area, you simply magnify that.
Now, how do you respond to the theory that farm salmon helps feed the world and also bolsters weak wild fish stocks?
Well, you know, we're not anti-aquaculture. Aquaculture has its place in the world. The problem is with the kind of aquaculture and the way it's practiced. With open net pen fish farming, there is no short of using vaccines and antibiotics. I have to say that there have been some advancements in those fields. There is no way to control the spread of pathogens and disease from these farms. So what we're suggesting is that we use an alternate method of producing fish, and you can do it on land in what they call closed containment facilities. These are facilities that you would put on land. You can recycle 90% of the water, keep it clean. You have no interaction between the fish that you're raising and the fish in the wild, so you don't have the problem with disease transfer. You don't have the problem with the deposit of waste on the seabed, because in open net pens, these fish are defecating into the water. The feed that they're not eating is settling. It all goes through the bottom of the net, and it settles on the bottom of the sea. You won't have that problem. In fact, you can collect that waste, and you can use it as a fertilizer. So there are a lot of advantages, certainly, to aquaculture, and it is a means of feeding people. There's no question about that, but it's the way we're doing it.
What would be the best choice for sustainability when shopping for fish and seafood for consumption?
Well, one of the things we do have an organization called Sea Choice, and there is OceanWise. And the Monterey Bay Aquarium in the United States have all put out sustainable seafood guides. They're all available online. The David Suzuki Foundation has one online. And basically what that list does is it examines almost all of the fish that are consumed or sold in supermarkets, and it rates them on the basis of whether or not they come from a sustainable fishery. So a fishery that's not overfished, or a fishery that's not creating huge impacts on the environment, like bottom dredging, where they totally destroy coral beds or destroy the bottom of the sea, or they have huge amounts of bycatch, or they're overfishing. Those things are all identified, and they're ranked as like green, which would be an excellent buy. It's a well-managed fishery. And then there would be yellow stocks, which would be an alternative buy. There are some problems with the fishery, and there are ones that are flagged red. And there are little pocket guides that consumers can use and take with them when they go shopping. And the other thing to do, consumers can do, is actually talk to the fishmongers, talk to the merchants, ask them where the fish come from. Are they fished sustainably? So these are all things that the individual can do to ensure that the fish that is sold in markets does come from sustainable sources.
Well, it's clearly a very important subject, and I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
You're very welcome.
I've been speaking with John Waring, Senior Science and Policy Advisor for the David Suzuki Foundation, about the environmental impact of farmed fish and how we can choose sustainable seafood options.